Hi, I'm Sima Shapiro, the host of the new Contemporary Lifestyle Radio Show for Women Over 40, featuring everything about your health, wealth, children, happiness, and anything else of interest to you, the listener. Please stay tuned. Hi and welcome. I'm Sima Shapiro, your host of For Women Over 40. Today we'll be talking with two family writers, women passionate about traveling the country and world and doing so with their families. Erin Bender is the driving force behind the world's leading family travel blog, Travel with Bender. She shares relatable firsthand stories and expert travel insights on her blog, reaching hundreds of thousands of avid readers each month. With her husband and two young children, she's been on a nomadic journey since 2012 across 67 countries and counting. Heather Greenwood Davis is the award-winning freelance writer and columnist behind GlobetrottingMama.com, an international family travel blog. She is a strong advocate for travel as a tool for both education and family bonding, themes that often appear in her articles. Her most frequent outlets are National Geographic Travel, The Toronto Star, Top Lifestyle Show, The Social, and National Morning Show Canada AM. Articles and segments by her and about her have appeared in such places as O Magazine, NPR, and CBC. The married mom of two boys was named a Traveler of the Year in 2012 after a year-long family trip around the world that hit 29 countries on 6 continents in 12 months. So welcome, Erin and Heather.
Thank you.
G'day.
Good day.
Hola, depending on where I am.
I understand. The listeners will need to know that you are having a siesta on the beach with your little Mexican sombrero, and you're in Mexico, correct?
Correct.
Okay, then.
To the mojito.
So I have traveled much of the world, and I am in utter awe and fascination that the two of you would be crazy enough to want to do this as a full-time job with your family. And I'd really like to know a little bit about your journey to the present incarnation and what motivates you. Heather?
Wow. Well, the journey would take the entire show, but I think it's hard for people to imagine sometimes because maybe travel isn't the thing you find the easiest thing to do. You know, whatever you would be passionate about, think about being able to do something you love every day for the rest of your life. The journey for me includes a brief stint, about 7 years, too long in my books, as a lawyer. So I did a journalism degree first and then went off and became a lawyer and practiced for about 7 years and then found my calling and came back to journalism and to travel writing, mostly in a freelance capacity in about 2007.
So before I move on, let me just ask you, there are so many people who absolutely love to travel, but I don't think that it would occur to them that they could actually do so with their families and do so and make money. So how did you get that spark?
You know what? Motivation comes from a lot of different sources. So when I decided that I was going to leave the law and pursue writing, I wasn't necessarily sure that it was going to be 100% travel writing. And quite frankly, until recently, I would say it's probably about 50% travel writing. I do a lot of corporate writing and other kinds of sort of endeavors, freelance writing about other subjects. So I was able to round that out. I think for me, I just realized that it's about more than just the traveling. You know, it was offering me the lifestyle that I wanted for my family.
And Erin?
Yeah, my journey started really all of my husband's fault. He came up with the idea. He was a web designer, and he thought if we could, he could work anywhere in the world as long as he had his Wi-Fi and the laptop. And took about 2 years to convince me, let's go on a little adventure and go travel the world. So I kind of fell into travel writing. I have a marketing and PR degree, so the marketing and PR was easy for me. I also regularly taught social media classes, so I love social media. And I just wanted to start a blog to share with my family and friends this epic journey that we started going around the world with our kids. And from there, the writing took on a whole new level. And that's me. I just kind of, fell into it and made it work because it really fits in well with a marketing and PR. You really have to know how to market yourself on top of the writing.
So I'm guessing that in answer to a question of do you think of your work as a job or a lifestyle, you would tell me it's both, correct?
Yeah, it started as a lifestyle and it transitioned into a job, which is basically the best type of job you can have, is one that is all about how you want to be living and what you're passionate about. I love that.
And how about your family? Is everyone along for the ride happily?
Happily. So originally it was a 6-month trip, Josh told me. It's now been 4 years, so think it was a little bit of a porcupine to start with just to get me out the door, but it was working, so we continued to go. The kids, they change their minds all the time. You really, when you ask them, you have to get down to the root of the question. Like, I remember back in 2014, my daughter said, I don't want to travel anymore. And we were like, oh, no. And then I'm like, calm down, let's ask her a question. And I'm like, what do you mean? And she goes, I don't want to go on any more planes. And we were like, oh, is that all? That's easily fixed. So we spent a year training around Europe. So you really have to listen to each other and talk to each other constantly. But I would say at this moment, everyone is quite happy.
And Heather, same question. Is your family going along for the ride happily?
Oh, very much so. I think the great thing is I started, you know, my initial jaunt into travel writing happened while I was pregnant with my oldest, who's now almost 14. So they both have been born. The second child is 2 years younger than him, both boys. And they both were sort of born into this lifestyle that I'd adopted and sort of increasingly adopted of traveling and writing. And so they've never really known me not traveling or them not traveling with me. And they love it. I mean, they get a lot of attention for it, which I think helps, but they seem to enjoy it. And I love what it does for our family when we're out there.
Before we get into what's your favorite place, what's your favorite country, how do you handle having doctors, keeping friends, staying in touch with your relatives? How do the children do schooling? How do the pragmatics work, Heather?
Oh, well, I think my life is probably a lot easier than Aaron's in that respect because I'm not traveling full-time all the time. So we, you know, in between jaunts, we're home, and that gives us an opportunity to live, you know, a quote-unquote normal life when we're at home. And when we're on the road, especially that year when we were on the road nonstop, you'd be surprised at what you can keep up with. I mean, we are now traveling in an era of social media and Skype and messaging and all of those things, and so it was quite easy to stay in touch. In fact, I found it harder to try to disconnect.
I see. And Aaron?
In this society where Skype is so easy, keeping up with family and friends is easy, we've also found that it's given them opportunities to travel. A lot of the time they'll come and see us wherever we are. And I've seen my parents in Penang. I've done a road trip through Europe with them. Last year they came and met us in New York for Christmas. So it's really opened up the world of travel for them as well as us.
And how do you handle going to a doctor or the children's schooling? How do you handle the daily functioning with children?
Yeah, doctors are the worst, especially in the U.S., I'm afraid. It's just, Canada was actually really easy to go to a doctor. In the U.S., I found it a lot harder. We actually just did a dentist appointment yesterday here in Mexico, which was actually quite easy. We have a mail sorting service, so we have a P.O. box. All the mail goes there. They scan it. They email it to us. It's just amazing what you can do in this day and age with technology. And I would still say going to the doctors is probably one of the hardest things just because you don't know who to go to. But we always look out for recommendations from people, which is how we found our dentist yesterday. We just went to an expat group for Playa del Carmen, Mexico, and said, where's the best place to go? And they responded, and we booked it in.
Again, about the pragmatics. So how do you handle the time zone differences? And what happens if one of you needs a therapist?
Time zone differences, because we are working in our own business, we have the ability to basically adjust in our own time. We don't really have a time schedule to keep. Sometimes we obviously do press trips where there is a schedule or an itinerary to keep up, so it makes it a little bit harder. But there's other times where we just arrive in a country, we work our own hours, so we have the ability just to be on our own time clock and generally get used to a time zone. We've never really found it to be a struggle because of that.
And what about a therapist? What if you need somebody who is there for any additional issues that you bring to the table?
I guess we're pretty lucky. We don't feel we've ever needed a therapist. I saw a naturopath when I was in Colorado, but again, I just fitted it into something we were doing. I was in Mississippi eating dinner with a family, and they mentioned this therapist, this naturopath in Colorado, who actually does Skype consultations. However, I was on my way through Colorado, so I just changed direction a little bit. I was like, okay, instead of going to Aspen, we're going to Durango. And we booked in the appointment and headed down there. The flexibility of our lives makes these things a little bit easier, especially when after that naturopath appointment, she was like, you know, the rest we can do on Skype. This is not an issue. This is an amazing time we live in. The world is so much smaller than what it used to be.
I'm actually almost speechless. And Heather, same question about what happens when you are traveling. How do you handle the time zones? What if you do need a therapist? Do you struggle with the same issue?
No, I mean, I found, like Aaron is saying, I found that really the nature of the way that we are, because it is a lifestyle, you do find the things you need as you go, and you have the flexibility, which I think is what most of us don't necessarily have at home. I mean, at home, if you need to make a therapist appointment and you're working a regular 9-to-5 job, you've got to figure out how you're going to get the time off work, where the kid's going to be when you do that. Like, it's a bit of a juggle. And so it's still a juggle, but it's just different, and you have more control over your time and when you can schedule things. I found that the flexibility and the nature of this kind of travel means that you have control over your time, and it means that you can slow down when you need to slow down. There are days when we didn't go out and explore because we knew that the kids needed, you know, to stay home and watch TV, and that was perfectly okay. It's not the same kind of pressure you feel when you're on a 7-day vacation, where you know you've got to get everything crammed into this amount of time. When you know you've got a year to explore, it changes things, or four in Aaron's case.
So how do you get the money to do this? Do you look for a sponsor? Do your articles support you? Aaron?
So I mentioned my husband was a web developer before we left. About 2 years into the trip, he actually sold that job because the blog really took off. We started making money from brand ambassadorships where perhaps Tep Wireless offer us a Wi-Fi hotspot, and in return we upload our videos and say, hey, we just uploaded this with our Wi-Fi hotspot. I do a lot of freelance writing for magazines. Josh sells a lot of his photography these days. We might visit a place like Tallahassee in Florida, and then we say, hey guys, we wrote an article about you. And they go, oh my gosh, those photos are amazing. And we go, yeah, sure, you can buy them if you want. There's so many different ways, and the list is only as limited by your creativity.
But do these gigs pay enough money to actually support a lifestyle like this? You know, the article?
To be honest, we save 60% of our income while traveling. When we lived in Australia, we needed a lot more money. We lived in Perth, which was one of the 10th most expensive cities in the world. It's more expensive than London and New York. So we actually saved money when we started traveling. Our first year of travel, we saved over $40,000. We don't need as much money to live on now. Here in Mexico, we will barely spend $2,500 to $3,000 for the month. We have an amazing apartment with 2 bedrooms. I've got 4 pools looking as I look outside the window right now. And the food is cheap. We just did our weekly shop, and that costs about $100. The living expenses are less, and yes, the blog more than covers it. As your blog reaches bigger audiences, as you have more influence in the sphere of, for me, family travel, it's definitely an income that you can live on.
Heather, same question.
Well, 2 different things. I totally agree with what Aaron is saying, for sure. You've just got to structure your life in a different way. So for me, the same thing. I'm out of Canada, and here it would be very expensive. We know it costs a lot of money to live in North America, period, or at least Canada and the U.S. But if you take that abroad, you can live for a lot better, in some cases, for a lot less. And so that year, we made sure that we spent less time in Europe, for example, and more time in Southeast Asia. So we made sure that the things were offset that way. We also, ahead of that year, my husband is in public health, and what he did is he took a year-long sabbatical from work that he had earned. So it was, we call it here a 4-over-5. I think some people refer to it as a prepaid sabbatical. And what it meant was that he worked a little overtime ahead of the trip and took home a little less pay before the trip, and that meant that his job was saved for him for that year, and he was able to, he was paid as if he was at work during the year. So we were taking the same income. I was able to write and work from wherever, so fairly much the same income, but applying it in a situation where our costs were much, much less.
So the world is a scary place these days. It's literally very scary because no matter where you are, I don't know whether you can ever say you can be safe in the term that we mean it. And also, it's scary to travel. It's just a scary thing. You don't know whether you can handle things, whether you'll be able to speak the language, whether somebody will do something that you're unaware of how to get help. Do you, either of you, struggle with those emotions, Heather?
No. I mean, from time to time, there are moments of it, for sure. But I've found that the overarching thing that I've learned from travel as we go, even in the places that people think of as scary, is how good people are. And I think what happens when we're sitting at home is we're bombarded with the news, and we get a lot of information about the bad things that are happening, and we're given very distinct pictures of who people look like, who are doing those bad things. And you go out and you meet people one-on-one, and you're in situations where you really are helpless at some point and really need to depend on kind people, and they come through. So for me, travel has actually done the opposite. You know, it hasn't made me more afraid. It's made me less afraid.
Erin?
I have to completely agree. We have met people online that we just, they invite us to their house, and we rock up and we stay the night. The world is less scary to me now. We have spent 2 months in Israel. We are spending 3 months here in Mexico. For me, it really opened my eyes that it wasn't as scary as it seemed. The media is so one-sided with, basically, when you watch the news, you're only hearing about these bad things. You're never hearing about the good stories. And we have come across so many good stories.
I think that we've lost her in sunny Mexico. So, Heather, the same question again about the scariness of the world. I think the other thing that I'm struck with, and it reminds me of my own travel, is that when you get the opportunity to travel to other places and you get to see differing coverage of world events, it's absolutely a unique perspective how we, as opposed to any number of other places across the world, see any number of events. Would you agree?
Yes. Oh, for sure. I think one of the interesting things for me was to watch American programming, because that's usually what would come through if I was getting anything sort of from this area. When you're sitting, you know, in Kenya, it's very interesting. And your perspective, just in being in a place that is so different and watching the things that we might be giving priority up here, you know, very interesting to watch it unfold.
Let's talk about your favorite places. What are some of the most favorite places you've ever visited?
You know, that's such a tough question for me, and people ask me and think I'm deflecting, but it really is, because I'm sure the question that follows will be my least favorite places, and the fact is there is no place I've ever been to that I wouldn't go back to. But I'll tell you that the one place that really sort of struck and surprised me a lot was Portugal. And Portugal was one of our not planned stops on our year around the world. We had intended actually to go to Greece, and when the time of year came, we realized that Greece was probably a little colder than we wanted to get to at that time of year, and so we thought we would spend 3 days in Lisbon just to sort of bide our time before we moved on to Spain. And we ended up staying 2 weeks. I absolutely fell in love with it, and really at the end of our 2 weeks, it was just my husband pulling me, saying, you know, we need to move on, that got me out of there. I would have happily moved at that point. I really fell in love with it.
Why didn't you?
You know what? He made the point that we had started out with a very specific journey, and he felt that we should complete that journey and then go home and make a decision from there about what to do next. And I agree. I think it was the right thing to do, just to make sure. You didn't want to necessarily make that big a decision acting on emotion. You wanted to make sure that it made sense, and we still talk about it. So it may be a place that we go back to live for a longer period of time in the future.
And what were some of the places that you least liked?
That's just it. I mean, there weren't, especially on that trip, I felt like, I'll tell you, there were some that were harder than others. That might be a way to say it. We found China very difficult. This is a situation you're going into where you don't necessarily know the language, and I found the culture was completely opposite to what, you know, naturally occurred to me to do. So things like lining up for a bus and things that the way you would line up for a bus in North America was very different from the way that they got on the bus in China. And so it took a bit of a brain twist to be able to get along in China and figure it all out. We were also quite a sight in China. My family's black, and so there aren't a lot of black people, I guess, who come through China at that point. And so we were very much the focus of attention, and that was difficult. But at the same time, we came out of it. We ended up spending 30 days in China, and
that's
we came
amazing.
Out of it really appreciative of a lot of things and really glad to have had the experience.
Let's keep going on about places. Can you tell me the most incredible experience you had, and then not only incredible but resonating? Do you have those two?
Yeah, I think the ones that have, you know, again, China would fit in there, but I think the experiences that have sort of stuck with me are ones that changed my children. I'll tell you, I left home with my oldest, who's now 14. At the time, he was 8 and a very picky eater, and I think a lot of parents can relate to that. If a child has decided that they're not eating things that are red, green, and gold, and they only want things with no sauces. That's a very difficult mindset to change.
Sure.
And we took him on this trip and basically set out before we went and said, look, if I can get you the perfect color of Kraft dinner, I'm going to do that. But if I can't, we're going to have to figure something else for you to eat. You can't go on this trip and not eat. And he took that in over the months ahead and was open to it. And then I remember the first time that we had an opportunity. We were in the Galapagos Islands, and we were on an island. So, of course, all they had was seafood, and he wouldn't eat seafood. And we sort of turned to him and said, this is your moment. You know, we've been talking about it, but this is the moment when you have to make a decision about what you're going to have for dinner. And we handed him a menu, and that kid chose the most expensive thing on the menu, a lobster. And I actually remember turning to my husband and saying, you know what? You can't order anything because there's no way he's going to eat a lobster, and we're paying out of our pocket for this, so you need to be prepared to eat his lobster. And he surprised us. He ate it and loved it, and it really turned a corner for him where he is now probably the most adventurous eater out of all of us. You know, I had a similar situation with my second son. So he was 6 at the time, very shy, very much a kid who would sort of hang on to my legs when we went anywhere. And he quickly learned that we weren't going to be in places long enough for him to sort of work up to people, and that his brother was having a lot of fun. If he wanted to go out and meet other kids and have a great time, he was going to have to learn how to sort of get over it and get in there quickly. And he did. And now he, too, is a super gregarious kid who's sort of the first one into a crowd of kids. So I'm really proud of the different experiences that they had that way, and also really proud of the way that they've taught me over our travels. So I think as adults, we don't even realize that we're going into situations with preconceived ideas a lot of the time. And traveling with kids that were so young and so open to what was, you know, normal, really opened up the world for me a lot. They would see people dressed in all different kinds of ways, women fully covered. We were in some countries where that was the norm, and never question it. It was just the way things were done here, and that was okay. And that really opened my eyes a lot to the way I travel.
Back to the question of safety and security, I'm still going to circle this question again because I'm thinking about my own experience traveling.
Yep.
No matter how much I enjoy and I actually love traveling all over the world, I've been scared in so many places. And I don't know if the fear is real or imagined. Nonetheless, I think that things happen. So how do you help your family stay intact and safe in various circumstances?
Yeah, I understand the fear. I mean, and you know, I left my parents back here, grandparents, who were terrified the entire time we were gone. You know, it's a scary thing to think of from afar. Yes, there were moments on the road where we always put safety first. Let's start with that. That was our number one priority. And I think what you have to remember is that traveling with young kids is different than me traveling solo, for example. You know, maybe the choices I would make, maybe I'd be out at more bars in the evening. Maybe I would be out later at night. But when you're traveling with young kids, the routine is pretty tame. So
sure.
We just made sure that we weren't in situations where we felt uncomfortable. And if we happened into them, we changed course. We made decisions on what countries we would be in when based on what was happening in the world. We eventually went to Egypt, but we kiboshed that idea at least twice before we went because the timing wasn't right. And
sure.
If it had meant that in assessing the situation, if we had felt that it was going to be dangerous for us to go, we just wouldn't have gone to Egypt, you know?
Sure.
So we made those sorts of decisions along the way, but we truly never ran into a situation that we know of where we were never mugged, we were never ran into a dangerous person, per se, the entire trip.
Do you have any mentors that you follow or someone who helped you really get into this?
For me, it was always editors. I've had great editors, and I'm lucky that I've worked for very good magazines and that sort of thing. So there are, and as Aaron alluded to, there are communities out there as well that you can touch into. But as a professional travel writer, I'm a member of SATW, Society of American Travel Writers. I'm a member of the Travel Media Association of Canada. So these are all organizations with people who are doing this for a living, have done it for a long time, and who I could tap into when we were going from place to place. So for us especially, social media was huge. We were able to go, even in China, go online and say to people, listen, we're moving from, you know, Shanghai to Chengdu, and we're thinking we're going to do these things. What do you recommend? Or where is there a place you think we should stay? Or does anyone know someone here? And that connection was huge for us on the trip. Having somebody you know vouch for somebody they know and putting you in touch made, you know, speaking to your question of safety, really alleviated a lot of that fear.
Do you know how many travel writers there are in the U.S. or out of the U.S., the demographics of them? Do you have any stats to bring to the listener?
I don't have specific stats on that. I can tell you that the number of travel writers is growing, I'd say exponentially. Everybody seems to want to be a travel writer at this point. And I know the number of travel blogs and the very nature of blogging has made that easier. So there are a lot of people. I know all these organizations, SHEW, TMAC that I mentioned, they have now opened up what was always traditional writers and editors. Now they've opened that up to bloggers as well, which I think is great because it means you're getting a new voice and often a younger voice in the mix of things. But it's not a difficult line of work to get into. It is a difficult line of work to be paid to do.
Will you keep doing this for a long time, or will you do it after your children are grown?
I will. I mean, our plan is, I didn't start it for my kids. I do it because I love it. Family travel works for me because I have a family and can relate to that, and I think I'm relatable in that way. But travel is something I'm really passionate about, so I expect we'll do it long after they've left home and are traveling on their own.
So what one tip would you like to leave the listener with today?
I think sometimes people hear my story or Aaron's story and get the sense, well, this is huge, this is grand, you know, I could never, I get that a lot, I could never travel for a long period of time, or I could never save the amount of money to make it happen, or, you know, they talk themselves out of it. And I like to tell people to start small and start where you can. Because the values that come out of travel, the things that have really been beneficial for my kids and for my family, don't happen because of where we are. They happen because we're doing this thing together and spending that kind of time. And travel really just facilitates that. It's easier, you know, to hang out for the day, it feels, sometimes when you're away somewhere than when you're at home and the phone is ringing and there are demands on your time from play dates or whatever else. So I think if people just think of it as decide what it is you want, what values you want to impart on your family, what is it you want out of this one great life, and then work towards making it happen. And if that happens by traveling, you know, down the street or one city over or to a new country, then so be it.
We've been talking today with two women who are as passionate about traveling the world as they are about doing so with their families. We lost travel writer Erin Bender. Her Wi-Fi cut out, but she's sitting on the sunny shores of Mexico. Travel writer Erin Bender can be found at travelwithbender.com, Heather Greenwood at globetrottingmama.com, and also on Twitter and Instagram. Thank you so much, Heather, for joining me today.
No problem at all.
Should we go and fly down and join Erin?
I think we should be there. I think she's got the best out of this deal for sure.
I think so, too. I'm Sima Shapiro, your host of Four Women Over 40. Thank you so much for joining me today. And until next time, I hope you take care.